Thank you, Lynn. Hello, everyone. I am here now to share from the Seven Steps to Awakening. And tonight I am starting with, is this true? It is. Quote number 537. Funny, I thought I was in the 300s, but I must be in the fives. Quote number 537. And what I will do is give you a link to my journal for number 537, in case anybody wants to read along in the journal. And what I always like to do when I'm sharing from the seven steps is I really like to start with a moment of silence. So why don't we do that now? Amen. Whoops. I got kicked out of Pal Talk. I'm going back in. I got kicked out of Pal Talk during the silence. Are you all able to hear me now? Okay, good. Yeah, so you had a little extra silence while I was coming back into Pal Talk. All right, so as I mentioned, I'm going to start with 537. And first, I will read 537 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. This quote originally comes from the Garland of Guru's Sayings, which is a poetic restatement of Ramana Maharshi's teachings by Muruganar. Thank you, Lynn. So here is the first quote. The bright awareness, our true being, is the soul truth the heart should cherish. The triads we perceive should be despised and driven away as dreams created by the treacherous mind. I'll read that quote one more time. The bright awareness, our true being, is the sole truth the heart should cherish. The triads we perceive should be despised and driven away as dreams created by the treacherous mind. And as I sit here now today, I'm not clear on what the triads are. And I don't remember the day of this contemplation, so I don't know if I looked them up or what. But right this second, I have no awareness of what they are. But what I am going to do is just go ahead and go to my journal and see what I wrote after contemplating this quote. This was done on July 26th, 2012. The mind leads away from truth, and the heart leads steadily toward it. For this reason, disregard the mind, regardless of its story. Stay tuned into, in gentle, quiet following, the intuitive knowing that is the heart. And for me, I would have to say that this is the core practice of my life. It's probably the practice that I learned through the teachings of Inner Ramana. But outwardly, no matter what I appear to be doing now, inwardly, I am focused on purpose. In fact, today, we went out for pizza downtown Pueblo on the Riverwalk at a wonderful place called Angelo's. And then we went to a local gym, the Pueblo Athletic Club, and joined the gym. And then we took the dogs, Jamie and Shiloh, for a walk. And when we came back, and I was setting upstairs for a few moments before coming down here to teach, what I noticed was how, for me, the afternoon happened and didn't happen. And what I mean by didn't happen was, even while we were getting the pizza, and I loved the pizza, and I loved being downtown, and all of that. But my mind was more focused quietly on purpose. And the same thing, while we were at the gym, my mind was more quietly focused on purpose. And while we were walking the dogs, my mind was more quietly focused on purpose. And after we got back and I sat and I was reflecting on that, I realized that this could be one reason why I don't remember so many things now. Because I'm not all the way in them anymore. Wouldn't memory come from the mind? And if I'm not all the way there, it somehow isn't getting all the way stored. Because what I was really doing was focusing on purpose. And not only that, I feel like focusing on purpose is really all I want to do. Like, it's wonderful. I was very happy to go out and get pizza with Jasmine and Danielle. It was Jasmine's suggestion that we go out. I was very happy to do that. I was very happy to join the gym. I feel like going to the pool will be good for me while I'm bringing my hand back to life. That will be good physical therapy. And Jasmine needs to join the gym for her school. It's a requirement. And so, I was very happy to do that. And, of course, I was very happy to go walk Jamie. Jamie needs that every day, and she reminds me if I forget that we need to go for a walk. So I was very happy to do all of those things. But what I really, really, really want to do is be focused on purpose. It's interesting how the original quote says, "The bright awareness, our true being, is the sole truth the heart should cherish." And right now, if I use the word cherish, I feel like staying with purpose is all that I do cherish. I can do other things. I can gladly do other things. But I really want to be. My love is with my purpose. My heart is with my purpose. And that's where I want to be. And if there's anything that I want different, it would be only to go deeper and deeper into that direction. In fact, what I just heard my heart say is I'm willing to leave the rest behind completely. And I happily repeat that out loud because I know that my heart speaks for me. So again, in the journal number 537, the mind leads away from truth, and the heart leads steadily toward it. For this reason, disregard the mind regardless of its story. Stay tuned into, in gentle, quiet following, the intuitive knowing that is the heart. A couple other things that are interesting about this. One, it says disregard the mind regardless of its story. That's unconditional. And Peace Pilgrim once said that the ego knows the weakest spot in our armor, which means the ego knows exactly which story to start chatting about in the mind in order to get our attention. So this doesn't say disregard the mind, except when the story is really important. Because if it said that, except when the story is really important, there would certainly be something really important that would capture our attention and lead us away from truth. The mind leads away from truth. The heart leads steadily toward it. For this reason, disregard the mind regardless of its story. Stay tuned into, in gentle, quiet following, the intuitive knowing that is the heart. The other thing that I noticed about this that I found interesting was it says, stay into, in gentle, quiet following. In other words, the people around me don't even need to be aware of the fact that I'm focused on purpose. That can be completely invisible to them. And in fact, as you all know, because I shared it this morning during our gathering, one of the places that I have been spending a lot of time lately is in the New Testament. And in the early chapters of Matthew, you know, Jesus seems to really strongly encourage that our spirituality be a very quiet, private thing. There are reasons for that. The primary reason that Jesus seems to focus on, well, there's two primary reasons actually that Jesus focuses on in Matthew. One primary reason, and maybe the one he focuses on the most, is that, you know, the ego just wants us to be attached to it in some way. It doesn't care what way. And one of those ways is if we can have some kind of pride or some kind of concern about looking spiritual to others. If we choose to be completely quiet about our spirituality, very inward focus, but we don't really need to talk about it to family, to co-workers, to friends. It's just in us. Well, then there's no acting spiritual. There's no concern about being spiritual. In fact, the acting is acting very, very normal. The acting is, you know, going out for pizza and joining the gym and walking the dog. The mind is what's focused on purpose. The heart is what's focused on purpose. And no one else even needs to be aware of it. And so there's no concern, no ego concern about do they think I'm spiritual, because my spirituality is a private inner matter. The other reason that Jesus shares for keeping our spirituality private is that just not everybody is really interested or ready. And if we start talking about our spirituality a lot in front of people who just aren't really interested or ready, you know, we'll get a lot of different reactions. And if there is still doubt in our mind, those reactions could become a distraction for us. And so if we aren't talking about our spirituality, we eliminate the possibility of a distraction coming from the reaction of our friends or our loved ones who aren't really ready for the same thing yet, who aren't interested. I remember someone asked Peace Pilgrim why she wore that smock, that said Peace Pilgrim, and I think originally in the back it said something like walking 20,000 miles for peace. And they asked her why she wore that, and she said, well, you know, when she wore the smock, you know, then sometimes that what that created in people was what she called a healthy curiosity. And they would come up and they would ask questions. And she said, it's, you know, it's always better to talk to someone who has a healthy curiosity. In other words, other than wearing the smock, she wasn't walking around, you know, talking about her spirituality to everyone. Her spirituality was an inner, private matter. But if someone happened to see the smock and get curious and come up and start asking questions, then she was happy to answer the questions for as long as they asked them. And then when they stopped asking the questions, she was happy to let them go. Her spirituality didn't need to be broadcast. So again, the mind leads away from truth, and the heart leads steadily toward it. For this reason, disregard the mind, regardless of its story. Stay tuned into, in gentle, quiet following, the intuitive knowing that is the heart. And with that said, we can go on to number 538. If you are in the journal with me, you can scroll down, and underneath the comment and reply area, you can click on number 538. I will first read number 538 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. And Lynn has posted the link to 538 in the room for anyone who wants that. Here's 538 from the Seven Steps. Beside the self, nothing in truth exists. But then the deep delusion that the body is oneself makes one let go the solid, non-dual bliss of immortality and fall into birth and death. Beside the self, nothing in truth exists. But then, the deep delusion that the body is oneself makes one let go the solid, non-dual bliss of immortality and fall into birth and death. So I'm going to the journal, and this is what number 538 says in the journal. Attachment continues illusion. Be willing to recognize and release every attachment, including the most core attachments and the most subtle, and be free. This morning, of course, I talked about some core attachments that I've been looking at recently. One was simply self-interest, and the other, self-preservation. You could also call the belief, I am the body, a core attachment. You can call the belief, I am a person, a core attachment. You could even call the belief, I am vulnerable, a core attachment. And what this is saying is, as long as we hold on to these core attachments, the illusion continues, which means that reality is hidden. And if we want to know reality, we need to be willing to first recognize and then second release every attachment, including the most core and the most subtle. Why don't we go on to number 539? If you're in the blog, you can just scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 539. Quote number 539 is very, very short. Of all the demonic qualities, the basis is the ego. Some people don't like quotes like that. And I find the reason they don't like quotes like that is that there are certain words that they don't like. And when they see those words, instead of going within and letting wisdom teach what this quote is really trying to say. And I assure you, if it's in the Seven Steps to Awakening, it has something very valuable to say. Instead of going in and trying to find out what the quote really has to say, they just judge the word and then kind of discount the quote. Like, I don't like that quote. There's no such thing as demonic qualities. One thing I've learned as a person who contemplates is I've learned that if I feel any judgment against a word, the first thing I need to do is let go of my judgment. It's not up to me to judge how a master expresses himself or herself. It is not up to me to judge how a master expresses himself or herself. It is not up to me to judge how a master expresses himself or herself. It is up to me to listen and hear what the master is teaching. Of all the demonic qualities, the basis is the ego. Of all the demonic qualities, the basis is the ego. In the journal, this is what I wrote after contemplating that. I is the root of all evil, all problems, all suffering. And yet, I is treasured like the center gain of all gains. Notice how I is treasured. And then remember the truth about this phantom thought. Release attachment to the center gain, and all other gains fall away, leaving only yourself. Our previous quote, quote number 538, or actually not the quote, but the journal entry, said that attachment continues illusion. And it asked that we be willing to recognize and release every attachment. And then it said, including the most core attachments and the most subtle. And now in 539, we're looking at an attachment that could maybe be called both core and subtle. I, the belief in I. Five 39 tells us that I is the root of all evil, all problems, all suffering. And I've gone into teachings before that teach how this is true. I've taught this through NTI Ephesians. I've taught this through the code. I've taught this through the loop of experience. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. And basically what all of these teachings tell us is that as there is a belief in I, And as we are interpreting all experience through that belief, we are making a world full of energies and when the I thought is judging, when the I thought is angry, when the I thought is believing fear, when the I thought is believing guilt and blame, when the I thought is believing attack and defense, when the I thought is all caught up in these stories about me, the energies that it's projecting outward are the energies that create the appearance of things that, you know, we could call evil. It wouldn't be totally unfair to call them that. You know, the things that happen in war, the abuse that happens in families, I'm sure that there are things that go on in this world that my personal mind has not even sat back and imagined. Horrible things. And even though my mind has not sat back and imagined horrible things and does not think about horrible things, it is the hate energies that come from this mind, the judgment energies that come from this mind, the attack and defense energies that come from this mind, the guilt and blame energies that come from this mind, that is a part of all of those appearances. And what's at the core of every hate, of every attack, of every defense, of every fear? I. Without I, none of those stories could be. My attachment to the belief that I am a person is the cause of all evil. Of all the demonic qualities, the basis is the ego. I is the root of all evil, all problems, all suffering. And then yet, this is the amazing part, I is treasured like the center gain of all gains. Even if we think we hate ourselves, I talked about this morning, even if we think we hate ourselves, we really love this self, this personal self. We protect it, we defend it in any way we can. For most of us, self-interest is very strong. It hasn't even begun to weaken yet. Self-preservation, it hasn't even crossed our mind that the desire for self-preservation needs to be let go. Because our love of the self is so strong. I is the root of all evil, all problems, all suffering, and yet I is treasured like the center gain of all gains. So what do we do about that? Well, the suggestion from the journal is simply notice how I is treasured. Start to see for yourself. Lynn invited Bob Ferguson into the room a couple of weeks ago. And one of the moments that he talked about that was significant in his awakening is when somebody pointed out to him how much he loved his Bob self and how much he protected that Bob self. He needed to see this. This was a key moment in his awakening experience. Well, this journal entry is asking me, actually, but us, if you'd like to be included. It's asking me to do that same noticing. It's saying, notice how I is treasured. And then remember the truth about this phantom thought. And the truth is that all evil, all problems, all suffering come from this belief. If I didn't have I couldn't hate. If I didn't have I couldn't be jealous. If I didn't have I couldn't blame. I couldn't fear. I couldn't defend. I couldn't attack. And again, when I'm letting all those little stories play in my mind, energies are projecting that are creating appearances that I may personally never even be aware of. Things that maybe I don't even want to imagine. But I is at the root of them. So I need to notice how the I is treasured, and then I need to remember the truth about this phantom thought, that it is the root of all evil, all problems, all suffering. And then, out of compassion, for everyone, for the entire world, I need to release my attachment to that center gain, to the I. And as I release the I, everything else falls away. Because without I, there can be no hate. There needs to be an I that hates. Without I, there can be no fear. There needs to be an I that fears. There needs to be an I to attack, an I to defend, an I to feel guilty, an I to blame, an I to be jealous, right? If I let go there, it's like chopping down a tree, and all of the branches and leaves go down with it. I is the root of all evil, all problems, all suffering. And yet, I is treasured like the center gain of all gains. Notice, it says, notice, really look, pay attention, watch the mind. How am I loving this self? How am I protecting this self? How am I holding on to this self? How am I literally clinging to this self? Notice how I is treasured, and then remember the truth about this phantom thought. Release attachment to the center gain. And all other gains fall away, leaving only your self, of course, the capital S self, reality, truth. We can scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 540. Number 540 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, those who have made the hardest sacrifice, that of the ego, have nothing more to renounce. There's another word that sometimes people don't like, and just seeing the word stops them. They say, I don't like that word, and then they don't contemplate that, and they don't hear what the master is telling them. That sacrifice word, I don't like that. There is no sacrifice. Sometimes the people that are fastest to say there is no sacrifice are the ones who fear sacrifice the most because they believe it so deeply. And this is talking about a sacrifice. In fact, this calls it the hardest sacrifice. What is this sacrifice? Those who have made the hardest sacrifice, that of the ego, have nothing more to renounce. Why is letting go of ego being called the hardest sacrifice? Because, as we just discussed, that I is what we love the most. We are literally letting go of what we value the most. It is the hardest sacrifice. I thought we were very fortunate in the room this morning because Dances was here, and Dances shared with us an experience she had recently. I called it a perfect illustration, and I was so grateful to her for speaking up and sharing it with us. She said that she sat down with the intention of being absorbed. And we could call it absorbed into the oneness. She didn't use those words, but we could call it that. And that opportunity came, that invitation came. She was right there on the brink of being absorbed. And then she says something suddenly stopped her. She said, just like a horse jumped is the word she used. She said it was fear. And all these thoughts started coming into her mind, like, what about my identity? What do we love the most? My identity, my me. And when her mind started asking questions like, what about my identity? The experience of being absorbed stopped. I'm so grateful that she shared that with us, and I hope people were listening. Because she just explained why we don't awaken when the invitation comes. You know, we can't make that invitation come. She was really just so lucky that she sat down with the intent and that it came. But when it comes, if we still value the self more, we won't make that hardest sacrifice and allow ourselves to be absorbed. We will cling to the self. David asked, why do you refer to it as an invitation and not the result of practicing? I would say it's an invitation that can come as a result of practicing, but it's an invitation from grace. You can't make that opportunity to be absorbed happen. It comes. And when it comes, you then have a choice to make. And if we still value the self above all else, the choice will be easy. The choice not to go, not to be absorbed, not to awaken. Because we're going to grab what we value the most. So what is the practice then? Well, the practice that we were talking about this morning and the practice that we seem to be talking about again now is the practice of letting go of valuing the self. This morning I called it letting go of self-interest and letting go of the desire for self-preservation. Now it's being called letting go of valuing the I or cherishing the I. But it's all the same. And, you know, I think it's okay, but to me it's a little bit not helpful to deny the fact that we need to let go of valuing the self. To, you know, I think that sometimes we want to look away from these harder aspects of the truth. We want to look away to the more pleasant ideas. We want to look away to the softer concepts. But if we spend all of our time looking away to the softer concepts, when this opportunity comes, because we have not let go of valuing the self, we will grab for what we think is our lifeline, the self, the individual self, the false self, the ego, the I. So a part of our practice needs to be what is being recommended in this journal tonight. Noticing how we love the I, noticing how we defend the I, noticing how we cling to the I, and then letting go. We need to want the abstract love of truth more than this seeming concrete I. That's what needs to happen for us to accept the invitation. We need to want the abstract love of truth more than this concrete sense of me. Those who have made the hardest sacrifice, that of the ego, have nothing more to renounce. It's as I mentioned a while ago, it's like cutting down the whole tree, right? If I let go of I, I've also let go of everything that comes out of I. I've cut down the entire tree. There's nothing else to renounce. David has written, "You said it perfectly, that I choose what I value. When I am noticing I, I'm also noticing I value it most. How do I let it get when it really is what, how do I let it go when it really is what I value? How do I want the abstract love of truth more than a concrete me?" Well, having not completed that task myself, David, I don't know that I can give the perfect answer. But I have some answers I can give. For example, you know, if somebody seems to be in some way attacking you, threatening your reputation, saying falsehoods about you, that kind of thing, you know, definitely what often arises is desire to defend myself, defend my reputation, right? Well, that's one of the ways that we continue to value I. So what I can do when I see this desire to defend myself, defend my reputation arise, is I can choose not to take that invitation. I can choose to do nothing. And by choosing not to defend myself, not to defend my reputation, I let go a little bit of that valuing of I. You may even find some pain about doing nothing in that case. Another example that comes to mind is, and this may apply to you more later in life because I realize, you know, you don't have money at this point. But when people began to have money, the temptation is to really keep, you know, most of my money for myself. It's my money and it's my security. In fact, you know, people are frequently challenged at even the idea of giving away 10%, what is called tithing. Even 10% sounds like a stretch of giving away what is mine. Well, what if the aim was 20% or 25%? Heck, what we read in the Bible this morning, Jesus said, whenever anybody asks, give. Just giving more than you think you can give, giving more than the mind says you can give, is letting go of some of that self-interest, some of that value of I. When you're going with friends somewhere and, you know, discussing where to go to dinner or whatever you're discussing, and you notice that you have this desire, you know, tonight you want Mexican or you want, you know, whatever. And you start noticing yourself, you know, really manipulating in the conversation to try and get everyone to go to where you want to go. That's just a simple way of valuing I. So what if that just isn't done? Even if the place that somebody throws out is the last place in town you wanted to go, what if you go there? What if you just start noticing all of the little ways in everyday life that you continue to value and protect I, and start not doing those things or doing the opposite of those things? Like I said, it's probably not a perfect answer, but it seems helpful to me. So again, we've been reading number 540 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. Those who have made the hardest sacrifice, that of the ego, have nothing more to renounce. Let's look at number 540 in the journal. What is ego? My thoughts, my perceptions, I. In relinquishing this attachment, all other attachments are also released. For without my thoughts, my perceptions, and I, what is there to be attached to? You know, one of the practices that we talk a lot about in this room, and I think it's a practice that many of us really enjoy, is the practice of accepting everything, letting all things be as they are. That's a wonderful way to let go of valuing the individual self, because the individual self has too many preferences to want to accept everything. The individual self doesn't want to accept everything. The individual self is very certain that certain things should be different than they are. Very certain. So just in our willingness to accept everything as it is, allow all things to be as they are, we are letting go of our attachment to that I. Again, what is ego? My thoughts, my perceptions, I. In relinquishing this attachment, all other attachments are also released. For without my thoughts, my perceptions, and I, what is there to be attached to? Without my thoughts, my perceptions, and I, what is there to be attached to? You can scroll down underneath the comment and reply and click on number 541. We have time for another one. 541 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, losing the false ego in awareness and firm abidance as awareness is true clarity. You know, I'm reminded right now of course, I played a little bit from Jesus Christ Superstar this morning, but there's another song. It's the opening song that Judas is singing when he's beginning to doubt Jesus. And he's talking about Jesus' followers. And he says, you know, they have too much heaven on their minds, you know, and he's telling Jesus, you know, have you forgotten that we are, what's the word? Occupied? Is that the word? Have you forgotten that we are occupied? He's telling Jesus, you're attracting too much attention. And I'm just trying to save our life. You know, Judas believes he has now arrived at clarity. Judas is saying, I see now. I see what's happening, Jesus. You're attracting too much attention. Everyone who's following you is a fool. What's going to happen is that the Romans are going to turn on us. They're going to kill us all. You know, this needs to change. This needs to stop. And Judas feels very, very clear. Well, quote 541 says, losing the false ego in awareness and firm abidance as awareness is true clarity. I cannot get clarity from my perceptions. I cannot get clarity from my thinking. Although Judas may have felt certain in that scene that he had arrived at clarity, the truth is he had just stepped very, very deep into confusion. In the journal, I wrote, before mind, there is no I. With no I, there are no I thoughts, and there are no I perceptions. Abide in before mind. Although this may seem impossible, it is not, because there is intuitive guidance that leads this abiding. Stay still and stay tuned inward. Although shadows of I thoughts and I perceptions may appear, intuitive guidance shines a light on them. In light, shadows disappear. So how does one abide before mind when there is still a quite strong, quite active mind? And the answer is really where we began tonight. The answer is staying tuned in to the heart. Don't believe any of mind's stories. When the mind starts chattering, ask the heart, how am I to see this? What am I to think about this? Always let the heart guide. If we start believing our mind, we're as foolish as Judas in that song. But if we listen to the heart keeps us in before mind, even when the mind is active. The heart doesn't solve the problems that mind brings up. The heart asks us to disregard the problems that mind brings up. It asks us to disregard mind entirely. So if I'm Judas, and I'm starting to notice that Jesus is attracting a lot of attention, and I'm starting to get fearful that the Romans are going to kill us all because this is getting too, too big, and I tune into the heart says, let that story go. Just rest the mind. Accept how you feel, but trust me as your healing guide. Why don't we listen to Judas? Heaven on their minds.
My mind is clearer now.
He thinks his mind is clearer now.
At last, all too well, I can see where we all soon will be. If you strip away the myth from the man, you will see where we all soon will be. Jesus, you've started to believe the things they say of you. You really do believe this talk of God is true. And all the good you've done will soon get swept away. You've begun to matter more than the things you say. Listen, Jesus, I don't like what I see. All I ask is that you listen to me. And remember, I've been your right-hand man all along. You have set them all on fire. They think they found the new Messiah. And they'll hurt you when they find they're wrong. I remember when this whole thing began. No talk of God, then we called you a man. And believe me, my admiration for you hasn't died. But every word you say today gets twisted round some other way. And they'll hurt you if they think you've lied. Nazareth, your famous son, should have stayed a great unknown. Like his father carving wood, he'd have made good. Tables, chairs, and oaken chests would have suited Jesus best. He'd have caused nobody harm, no one alarm. Listen, Jesus, do you care for your race? Don't you see we must keep it our place? We are occupied. Have you forgotten how put down we are? I am frightened by the crowd, for we are getting much too loud. And they'll crush us if we go too far. If we go too far. Jesus, to the warning I give, please remember that I want us to live.
Self-preservation.
But it's sad to see our chances weakening with every year.
It's all just self-interest.
Your followers are blind. Too much heaven on their minds. It was beautiful, but now it's sour. Yes, it's all.
There's more to the song, but I'm going to turn it down there because I think you all got the point. I mean, you could hear everything that we're talking about in that song. And Judas starts off by saying, you know, I'm clear now. I see now. But he's just gone so deep into believing the stories. He's totally into self-preservation. You know, in his case, the individual self has extended a little. He not only wants to save his skin, but the skin of Jesus and his friends, right? But he wants to save these people, right? Self-interest, self-preservation, valuing the I. That's what that song is all about. And that's tonight what we're being asked to let go of. Before mind, there is no I. With no I, there are no I thoughts and no I perceptions. Abide in before mind. Although this may seem impossible, it is not, because there is intuitive guidance that leads this abiding. Stay still and stay tuned inward. Although shadows of I thoughts and I perceptions may appear, intuitive guidance shines a light on them. In light, shadows disappear. Again, disregard the mind's stories. Stay with the heart. And I need to go. I've gone over time. Bye, everyone.